Hello, and welcome to the Software Stories podcast from Venturi's Voice. I'm your host, Andy Davis. In this show, I'll be chatting to software experts from all sectors about their careers in tech. The show aims to bring you insights, anecdotes, and stories from like-minded professionals that you can learn from and apply to your own career. If you like the show and you want to hear more from us, you can follow us via SoundCloud, iTunes, or Spotify, or join us on Slack. Thank you, and enjoy the show. Awesome, we've got Hansel Dunlop here. He's the Vice President of Engineering at Touch Surgery. Absolute pleasure to have on the show, Hansel.
Thank you, Andy. I'm very happy to be here. I'm grateful to have a chance to talk about hiring and building products in this regulated industry as well.
Yeah, absolutely, mate. Well, like I say, we obviously have a lot to come in contact with, because obviously I used to work over at Touch Surgery several years ago. So definitely excited to have you on and just kind of see a little bit what you guys have been up to, and it can't be many more exciting places to be, I suppose, with some of the points that we were making before we started the recording.
Yeah, I mean, it's the product that we're building is just very exciting to me. It's a fun thing to work on. Obviously, we have our free app, which is a resource for educating surgeons, people that want to be surgeons. But we've recently also spent a couple of years developing a suite of professional tools to help surgeons, individual surgeons and hospitals, manage surgical video and gain insights from it.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's like, say, the product's evolved a lot, and the space in general digital tech in general seems to have really expanded, and you can't help think that, you know, Touch Surgery certainly had played a role in that. You know, I think, you know, obviously beyond the products that Touch Surgery offers, even in like the likes of robotics, you know, analysis that we're able to generate now, it is a really compelling and exciting time. And I certainly felt like when I was there, the nice thing about it was that you were kind of working towards like quite a common vision, you know, about bringing, you know, best surgical practices to the masses. And I know that obviously someone as talented as yourself working within London, where there's a market so accessible to you with a man of your skill set, you know, it's got to be like a main driver as well to know that, you know, the vision is working towards something that is, you know, massively positive as well.
Yeah, I think that's an important thing that we're able to offer. And it was definitely part of the sales pitch when I accepted the job here from our then VP of Engineering, James Kellerman, who said, look, you know, there's many companies you could go work for. There's the banks down the road, because we're in Old Street, and they'll probably pay you a little bit more, but wouldn't you ultimately be want to work on something that's going to help people eventually at the end of the day? And, you know, plus surgical robots, they're always pretty exciting. So I was sold, basically.
Awesome. Yeah, no, it's great. And I think that's important, you know, like you say, especially around that kind of Old Street area now, you know, when we're going to talk obviously a little bit about talent and recruiting processes and things like that. But, you know, I do think that it at times it's massively important, you know, when you are competing against players who can come in and just bully their way in with big salaries and stuff, you know, you must kind of be something that you need to hang on to. You know, it's a difficult job, I could imagine, for some of these fintechs and stuff with that regard, you know, and, you know, who might not have as much of a positive message as maybe Touch Surgery has, you know, and that's okay. I'm not saying there's anything wrong with profiteering. Don't get me wrong. I'm the last person to complain about that. But, you know, you have to hang on to it, especially in such a, you know, condensed environment like Old Street, for example, where there's just so many kind of compelling projects, and talent is great. Technical talent is just such a shortage anyway.
Yeah, indeed. I think one of the key things for me is, as a sort of VP of engineering, is to build the right environment that people want to come and work in. Mm. So, and that's what I sell people on as well when I invite them to come and work with us, really. They're doing good work with a really diverse team of people. It's very easy to look out at other companies and say, you know, they've got some money, they're doing all these cool things, but as a developer, what's your day-to-day experience going to be there? Mm-hmm. Are you going to have a safe environment? Are you going to be able to work well? Are you going to enjoy the work practices themselves? And so that's also kind of part of my whole sort of approach to recruitment, is around creating an environment that developers want to work in, rather than something that sort of they'll be fleeing from at some point in the future. And I think that's kind of, as someone who spent a long time as a developer, I think we all kind of inherently understand what those things are.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, it's an important something to be reminded about as well. Is, you know, there's push and pull factors for like a lot of developers, and you know, I just wonder from kind of your experiences. Obviously, as you become more senior, you end up in these positions where you know you have to, you know, I suppose in a way, kind of sell people on like why they should join you. It's a crazy marketplace, isn't it? I suppose now, but you know, it's certainly the case. And I just wonder whether, you know, you feel as though you've had to kind of adjust your approach, because I would imagine it's quite easy to start selling people on, I suppose, what you would like, you know, from a personal perspective. And obviously everyone can be different, especially in engineering. So how have you kind of approached that, you know, in having, I suppose, a more balanced approach to, you know, maybe recruitment, but also just your approach to managing the team and building that culture in general?
I mean, I think it's, for us, it's about looking for a diverse range of people from different backgrounds. I myself actually sort of almost stumbled into development because I until the age of 30, I hadn't actually written any software in professionally at all. I was doing marketing or sort of promotional stuff for the Australian government, which is, it's just strange because I'm actually from New Zealand. But and that was the thing. None of those jobs had ever really grabbed me or anything as well. And I'd always had this idea for building a prediction market for consumer goods that I'd been trying to convince people for years and years at sort of every dinner party I went to. If I saw that someone was technical, I'd go, hey, I've got this idea. Would you like to help me build it? And of course, people say, well, if you pay me for a year salary, then I'll help you for a year. I just thought it was a really good idea. So eventually I started in my evenings and weekends working on it myself, and because I realized that was the only way I was going to actually build this thing. And so I was never interested in the tech side of things, really. I was trying to achieve my goal, and I sort of, all the decisions I made was just, what's the easiest way for me to get to this goal where I actually have this running prediction market for consumer goods. And 6 months later, I built something that wasn't very good, didn't necessarily work reliably, and it had, in fact, as a business, it was also quite a bad idea because this was pre-Kickstarter. So you can imagine trying to figure out in a complicated way how to develop new products via a prediction market is probably much harder than just saying, well, you pay for this in advance if I promise to build it, which is a much better idea. Went through that process and I realized, hey, I really enjoyed building this thing, even if it was a bad idea. And I loved that process of developing things. So I quit my job and accepted a development role at a small, very small startup with three other people. And that was sort of where it all began, essentially. That's kind of the, and I was very, very lucky at that point in time as well to fall in with those three developers who I'm eternally grateful for, who were very, very rigorous around the discipline of how to actually build complex systems, because I'd already had that experience where I built something that was almost too complicated for me to reason about, and I couldn't change things. It was all too difficult. And I just thought, hey, I guess everyone else is much smarter than me at this stuff. But really, there's just lots of systems that you have to put in place, lots of testing, sort of code review, pairing on programming and stuff that help you build something that's help you turn complexity into something that's reasonable and easy enough to reason about and that you can actually work with safely. So I guess that's kind of, so my approach to building an environment for engineers that everyone can do good work in and that actually enjoys working in is about that sort of safety. So having the right levels of test automation, having it almost be almost impossible for a developer to break anything. So if I bring a junior developer into our team, I want them to be able to write some code on their first day, make a pull request and hit merge, and that goes into production. Or it doesn't, because they've made a small mistake and it doesn't do anything wrong, it doesn't do anything bad. They get a little error, they get a warning. Mm-hmm. And that's the kind of environment that I strive to create and have built at Touch Surgery. But you know, there's always, you can always make it better, essentially. But if you just have that safety in place, you can hire a more diverse range of people who aren't, and train them on the job and stuff as well, because you can guarantee that they won't break things and that they'll feel safe and comfortable to do great work and as they grow into their role, basically.
Yeah, it's interesting. Well, we hear that, I think, frequently, but about like the the kind of persona that people want. You know, people want diversity. They want that kind of diverse range of thought, which obviously is incredibly empowering, especially when, you know, looking at building new products like what obviously you are and have developed recently at Touch Surgery. I think you need that kind of diversity of thought to generate the ideas. And, you know, you need people who are, you know, I suppose, commercially minded, maybe like one way to put it. And I can't help but think that you kind of had that from the fact that you did have another role that perhaps was a bit more commercially minded. I wonder whether that you kind of saw as an advantage, you know, coming to engineering like later, because you had the kind of commercial awareness perhaps before engineering.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's an advantage and disadvantage, because you've at my age, I probably would have been, if I'd gone straight from university, I would have had an extra few years of experience, quite a few more years. I'd probably have an advanced computer science degree or something as well. So there's certain areas in my knowledge that I'm always like aware of gaps and things that I need to fill in, or questions that I need to ask the right person. But the in terms of my ability to get things done and deliver products that work and also influence the rest of the business in certain ways, then I think those are really valuable skills, because you're, as an engineering leader, you're always negotiating with the rest of the business to try to make sure that you create the right environment for your team. So it's you're constantly explaining why you're doing things in certain ways. Because I think for people who haven't been engineers, who haven't worked as software developers, some of the things that we do are sort of unintuitive. The giving people the space to do work that seems like it's maybe a little bit tangential to what they have to do, but actually, if you let them do that work, then they're going to speed up our overall velocity, for instance. That's kind of, that can seem confusing to people, and you have to justify it, argue for it, show evidence that this thing is good, and have that. You can't just say, well, it's the way we should do it. You have to be able to negotiate and convince the rest of the business, the other executive team, that this is the right way to do things. And I think from I've had great success over the years of recruiting people who have had that career change as well. I think that, I mean, we talk about diversity as diversity of sort of race, sexuality, religion, but diversity of background as well as and in terms of where you've worked before is also really, really valuable. And we have people here who have transitioned from, you know, being ad producers or medical officers, that kind of thing, who now are programming. And the amount of base knowledge they have around the industry that they've left and now joined us really, really helps them in their day-to-day, because they can make better decisions around the products that they're building. I mean, as a developer, we probably don't think about the huge amounts of decisions we constantly make that will ultimately affect the product, but having those people in the room while you're doing that thing is sort of very helpful. And it's just sort of, yeah, I think it is just, you build healthier teams that way, basically, I think.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And I think it's just obviously a smart move to kind of put the safety blockers in check as well. I don't know. I mean, obviously, I'm not technical, so I don't know whether that's like a commonality, but it almost doesn't seem as though it's been as monotonously kind of thought out as perhaps the way you're kind of articulating it. I don't know what your prior experiences are, as whether you've also seen other companies doing that, you know, in order to kind of counteract for perhaps people who aren't going to be directly up to speed from the moment that they join.
Yeah, I mean, I think there are most companies sort of, well, most tech companies will sort of operate in this manner. I've never had an experience of a company that doesn't work like this, because I've actually refused to work for everyone that I've ever come across who doesn't already do it, or right. who is not open to the idea of me coming in and doing that immediately, because I just can't work in an environment where I'm worried about things all the time. Like I don't want to have to be paged in the middle of the night because something's broken. I want to leave the office at 6, go home, feel very secure that everything is still working as it should be, and that we've had one outage in the last 2 years, essentially. That was kind of for 20 minutes. And that's the kind of reliability I want to get to. And if I don't have that, then I don't want to be reactively responding to emergencies all the time. It's just not a great way to work. It's not a great way to work. It's not a great way to live. It's very stressful. And once you get sort of trapped in that mode, then it's harder to get out of it because you are spending so much time working reactively that you can't focus on generally improving everything else instead. I know they exist. I have friends who work for these places, but ultimately I haven't, because I've been lucky enough to be able to make those choices and make those decisions, basically.
Absolutely. And I think their one outage was probably that time when I was there and I probably spilled my drink on
the last outage we had was definitely human error, but it was a
spilled drink by
the market. It wasn't a hot drink. We can't blame you for that, Andy, unfortunately.
Awesome, mate. Yeah, I mean, it's, you know, talking about, you know, building products as well and being in a reactive state of mind, it's certainly something that I can relate to, you know, is kind of building a process where you don't have to worry about it. You don't have to be super reactive and you are in that kind of headspace. And obviously no more important place to kind of ensure that you are in that state of mind than in a startup environment, and especially something like Touch Surgery, where there has been such a premium on, you know, building out new products that you can kind of monetize off. So, you know, it must have been kind of a conscious thing that kind of you went into knowing. But, you know, beyond just obviously creating those safety blocks, is there any other things that you feel have been kind of paramount to enabling the team to have the success that they've had, where they've been able to creatively conceive ideas on new products and then actually execute on it?
I guess as a sort of engineering team, it's our close relationship with our product team, and the interplay there as well, as I think is really important. Having a mutual respect for both of those teams, I think, is really important, and that's kind of something else that I think we focus on and care about, which is to say that everyone's voices gets heard. So if someone wants to put up their hand and say, "Hey, look, there's a potential problem here. It might take me a little bit longer to do it this way, but, you know, I think it's too much of a risk to do it otherwise." That partnership relationship, rather than kind of do what we tell you to do and we need to do it as fast as possible, basically, is what leads to a mess, essentially. So I think nurturing that relationship, creating that, making sure that everyone respects each other, understands each other, and can have open conversations about the potential trade-offs you're making. Because that's the thing as well. We're always making trade-offs. We're always saying, well, we could spend 6 months doing this in an extreme way that's sort of perhaps over-engineered, if you will. Or we can do this in a quite simple way and see what – and this is what startups do all the time, of course – and see how we how it performs, if we actually get any users or any traction in the market, and then we can consider, you know, resourcing it properly. So it's making sure at all levels of the engineering product team that there is open dialogue and trust and respect. I think that's kind of my other main thing that I'd like to look for as well.
Awesome, mate. You know, obviously since you've been there, like 2017 till now, you know, aside from the obvious changes to kind of probably the direction and the product focus, what do you feel has been, you know, I suppose some of the key learnings that you've taken from this experience, and some of the, you know, the key areas where, you know, you have had to kind of adjust your approach from, you know, just from your own personal learnings or out of necessity in the marketplace, etc. But is there a couple that you perhaps can reflect on and share with us?
Yeah, absolutely. I think the main one is that I've never worked for a company in the medical space before, and it's a very, very different industry. It's quite highly regulated. Obviously, it's safety, security are key. These are not negotiable things. And also, the way you do product development has to be a little bit different as well, because you don't have, so we're building products for surgeons, and there's not a huge amount of surgeons out there. It's not a huge market. You know, if we say there's 1 million surgeons in the world, then there's 1 million surgeons. It's not 7 billion. Mm-hmm. So the way we can't, every surgeon relationship for us is important. So we can't sort of put out a bit of beta software that, burns those contacts or gives them a really bad impression of us. We have to be much more careful about our process of development and getting that user feedback is a little bit more difficult than most consumer products companies. So we're trying to build a very, very user-friendly product, unlike, because most medical software is incredibly user-unfriendly and leaves a very bad taste in both hospitals and surgeons' mouths, essentially, because they've been burnt before by having things forced upon them that have just, I mean, there's a lot of articles and stuff written about how much time surgical staff are now spending essentially sort of doing data entry and really, really clunky interfaces that they do not appreciate doing, and how much of their extra time has now become because of their own regulatory requirements of following steps and checklists instead of making sure that they've done things the right way. They're now spending a lot of time working with very, very horrible pieces of software. And that's kind of what we're trying to change a little bit as well. We're trying to bring that real consumer user friendliness that you'd expect in a consumer application into that medical environment. And I think that's where we're getting some positive traction with that. But it's also there's a challenge because you have to, like I said, the sales cycles are very long. If we're user testing, it's hard because we're very, very lucky, of course, because we have both of our founders are surgeons. So I think the first time I went into an operating room, I was terrified. I was trying to be as small as possible, pressed against the wall, just thinking that if I touched anything, somebody would die. I was with Andre, who's one of our co-founders, and that's his environment. This is his natural place. And seeing him in that was amazing because he was there kind of making sure, staying out of the way, being very careful, but also being in place to provide, if a nurse or a surgical assistant needed something, he would be available to kind of mop the brow or something basically as well. So he was very comfortable in that space, and being able to get access to that environment, the operating room, is an incredible learning basically, because I think until which we try to send our engineers through the operating room as well to sort of so that they can observe where their products will be used and why what we're doing is important, but also the stress of the situations or the extreme difference from most other workplaces that surgeons operate in, essentially. Yeah. The theatre. Yeah.
Interesting. Yeah. Yeah. That's I can imagine that being like a shift in attitude for people. Do you try? I would imagine to the best of your ability to try and get people in as soon as possible, so they kind of have a perspective on why you're building building products in a different capacity.
Yeah, I mean, we just try to give people that insight into where the products will be used and how they'll be used and how little distraction we don't want to put extra pressure on the minds of surgeons. We're actually trying to take it away and make things more automatic, especially with things like the so we're doing one of the products we're making is for a laparoscopic surgery is done with a camera already, mm-hmm. of course, so there's already a video feed, but that video is quite hard to access, it often just gets deleted. So storing that somewhere safely and securely and making it accessible to the surgeon for later review or for another surgeon to review as well, is even that simple characteristic of having that surgical video has already proven to be quite useful for people, because someone could present back to the hospital with a problem that they think, oh, but maybe this is caused by the surgery, and then they review the surgery and they say, no, look, that's fine, it's probably something else, so do these tests instead. Just cutting down on times for people to actually be diagnosed properly and dealt with.
Interesting, mate. Really interesting. There's a lot of growth happening again. I won't kind of give too much away. I'll let you kind of say that. So I'm not mentioning anything I'm not supposed to, but obviously you've kind of been through that experience once before. Do you feel that obviously kind of looking at approaching that again and with growth, at least, and I mean like kind of headcount and things like that.
Yeah.
Do you feel that you're kind of ready for another experience of that, as ready as you can be? And do you think that there's going to be things again that perhaps you might be able to do differently? Because obviously when you started not too long after I did, they went through obviously a monumental growth. So going through that again, it's a kind of a rare experience, I suppose, for a lot of people to have kind of gone through twice. So do you think that you're kind of better equipped to
think so, yeah. I mean, I think every experience teaches you things and you always learn from them. And I think we learned a lot from our last period of where we doubled the size of the company. And I think we will be doing things quite differently. We're looking more to be organized around cross-functional teams that cut through whole business lines, you know, including people from marketing, you know, animation studio, medical offices, salespeople, and then hiring into those, and of course, engineering staff and product teams and designers and things as well, and hiring into those teams where they have capacity issues, basically. So if that one of those teams who might be working on our touch surgery professional product is telling me that, you know, the problem really is they need some platform engineers, then that's when we know that that's kind of where we actually are suffering. Because we don't want to hire for the sake of hiring. Of course, we want to build teams that can deliver great products to a particular type of customer. That's our goal for this year.
Awesome, mate. It's going to be exciting, man. I'm looking forward to kind of staying in touch and seeing how everything develops. Still, obviously, a massive fan of kind of touch surgery, always have been.
Oh, thank you, Andy.
Yeah, so the last thing, I guess, that I've been asking a few people lately, it's a bit of a randomly broad question, but something that nonetheless tends to get slightly different answers, which I suppose is nice. It's just about like personal goal setting. Obviously, you've had a couple of different careers, you've got well-versed in different startups, etc. Just wondering about how you approach goal setting today, and just curious whether that perhaps has changed, in over time.
I guess I'm sort of terrible at goal setting, to be honest.
Me too.
Ever since my first kind of office job back when I was 25, I remember my manager at the time asking me what my 5-year goals were, and I was like, I guess working here more. She was like, is that really? I'm like, I don't know. I don't think that is really. I sort of stumbled into the tech industry almost on accident. But in professionally in a career path, I think I'm very, very interested in building a great team or an engine for success for a tech business. That's kind of that's my goal right now. And I don't think I have anything beyond that. It's mainly, that's the challenge that I want to overcome. And if we can do that, then maybe I'll just take a vacation for 10 years or something as well. See.
Well, hope you managed to get to that point, mate. I like it.
Thank you, Andy.
Hansel, it's been a pleasure, mate. Thank you so much for taking the time. Thanks for listening to the show. I look forward to hearing everyone's thoughts on this episode over on the Venturi's Voice Slack group. See you next time.